Hey, this is Dustin, and you are about to listen to a very special episode. On this episode 151, we have a guest by the name of Nintendrew joining us. Now, something that you need to know about Nintendrew is that he is unbelievably knowledgeable when it comes to all things Nintendo. And so our recording this week went much longer than usual because we couldn't stop talking to him about his Nintendo collection, our shared love for Nintendo, and of course, we also talked about the retro game of the week. And so for this episode, we had to cut down a lot more than usual to be able to produce for you this hour-long episode. However, we don't want you to miss out on the full content. And so we're going to make the full episode available to you. For this week only, if you support us at any level on Patreon, we're going to release that full recording, unedited, to anyone at any level that supports us. You can go to patreon.com/NGP podcast and click on the button Become a Patron. And you can also, while you're there, check out the different pledge levels. But for as little as $1, you can get the full unedited hour and 30 minutes worth of episode where we just kind of pick Nintendrew's brain, let him talk about the episode for sure, but really just all things Nintendo. So that's going to be available to you this week on our Patreon page. As always, thank you so much for your support and enjoy the episode.
Yeah, Diddy's my boy.
That's it.
That's all you got to add there.
That's all you got to say.
Welcome to New Game Plus. You're listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game, and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
I'm Nolan.
And this is episode 151, and we just had our three-year anniversary. We recorded a live episode on our Twitch channel and then released it as episode 150. If you haven't had a chance yet, go and check it out in all of its live glory. It's messy, but it's okay. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's the nature of doing something live.
I thought about quitting the podcast after last week, but here we are. We're back.
We're here because we actually came back simply because we had booked a guest, and we are really excited about having him on the show. But this is the grand finale. So our guest today is a YouTuber who focuses on collecting current and retro video games. His content covers a variety of Nintendo and gaming topics, including reviews, retrospectives, and do-it-yourself how-to projects. He has over 160,000 subscribers and almost 15 million video views total. It's a lot. And all of that is with only 75 videos. That's what's so amazing.
That's how you know it's quality.
Yeah, high quality. We're super excited to have him join us on the podcast today. So let's welcome Nintendrew to the show.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, hey, so Nintendrew is the YouTube name. We will call you Drew. Would you please introduce yourself to our viewers today?
Well, I mean, you did a pretty good job of it yourself. Yeah, you're exactly right. I've been doing YouTube for about a year and a half, going on 2 years.
We're not jealous at all.
I've been taking it seriously, I guess, for a year and a half. And my topics on my channel cover everything from, you know, how to make your own Nintendo 64 Classic, which is topical, or, you know, collection showcases. And I like to kind of cover more obscure corners of Nintendo's history, so things like DSi exclusive games or Mario games that were on non-Nintendo platforms, that sort of thing. So those little subsets of Nintendo history really interest me.
Yeah, and at least the room that you record in, I don't know if it's your bedroom or whatever, but it is decked out in Nintendo gear.
Yeah, that is not my bedroom, rest assured. This is my game room / studio. Well, sometimes I sleep there. It doesn't have to be your bedroom to sleep in it. But.
We are so excited to have you on the show today. Thanks for taking the time out of your schedule to join us. When we have guests on, we like to do a rapid fire series of questions up front, which is just largely unrelated questions, one after the other. And the goal is for you not to think too long about a particular question or to take too long to answer, but to just kind of answer from the gut, like first thing that comes to mind. Are you down for the challenge?
I will do my best.
All right. I've got three categories here: favorites, random, and the Nintendo specific. So they're not hard. It's not educational in nature. It's just kind of whatever your heart leads you.
All right. Good to hear.
All right. So we will, we'll start with favorites. All right. So favorite childhood TV show.
Ooh, this might be a weird choice, but probably King of the Hill.
That's good.
I watched that with my family a lot when I was a kid.
What is your favorite superhero?
Spider-Man, definitely.
Favorite holiday?
Probably Halloween, actually. Now we're coming up on it.
Yeah, we are. Favorite junk food?
Can cheeseburgers count as junk food? I guess that's not like a processed packaged food. Sure. That's like fast food.
It's pretty junky. So. Yeah. What's your favorite Final Fantasy game?
I've never played a Final Fantasy game.
All right, see ya, Drew. Thanks for being on the show today.
Not true. I've played Final Fantasy Adventure on the Game Boy for like half an hour.
That counts.
That's my experience.
The so best one.
Maybe that's my favorite one.
How many hours of sleep do you need?
I need 8. I get 3 or 4.
Oh my gosh.
You gotta go to sleep.
The cost of having a YouTube channel.
See, that answer will excuse all of my dumb answers for the rest of the hour.
There you go.
Are reindeers real creatures?
Yes.
That's a dumb question.
On a scale from 1 to 10, how good of a driver are you?
I'd say 9.
Same scale, how good of a singer?
Oh, 4.
Same scale, how good of a person?
Oh.
It's getting real.
That's a loaded question. I don't know. Maybe a 7.
Nintendo specific, what's your favorite Nintendo console?
Nintendo 64, for sure.
Out of the 296 Nintendo 64 games released in North America, how many do you physically own?
I own all 296 of the US releases, and I have probably about 10 to 15 imports.
I thought that was the answer, and that's why I asked, because that's amazing. Did you create a fully functioning, full-sized Switch arcade cabinet dock, and do you actually play it?
I did create it, and I do not play it. It was about, I think it was about a week after I made that thing for the video that it took a place in my closet, and it has stayed there for the next 8 months.
Yeah, still amazing. What is one of your most cherished Nintendo-related items?
I have a copy of Super Mario 64 that I got signed by Charles Martinet probably a couple months before I started YouTube, and that was a happy moment for me that I was able to meet him for the first time. And since then, it's kind of funny because I've gone to a few different conventions that he's also been booked at, so
that's awesome.
We've toured.
Which video of yours are you most proud of?
I don't know if I would say I'm the most proud of it, but as far as comparing it to the amount of coverage, or not coverage, but the amount of exposure it got, I think one of my more underrated videos is the video on the complete Virtual Boy library, because I went through and played each of the Virtual Boy games that released in North America and reviewed each of them in one video. And that was a big undertaking. So,
final question. Which yellow cartridged Nintendo 64 game about a gorilla and a tie did you select for our retro game of the week?
Super Mario 64.
That's right. Join us today as we talk about, it was close. Join us today as we talk with Drew, otherwise known as Nintendrew, about our retro game of the week, not Super Mario 64, but Donkey Kong 64.
Overview.
So Donkey Kong 64 is a 3D platform adventure style game that came out in the late 90s. It dropped before Christmas season of 99 specifically. Get in on that good Christmas money spending. And is a kind of twist in the DK series from the kind of 2D platformers of Donkey Kong Country that had been pretty well established. Rare developed a 3D version of kind of the same idea, published it, got Nintendo to publish it, probably vice versa, and plays kind of as you would expect from a Rare title, like a Banjo-Kazooie style Rare game, where you're running around, collect items like crazy. In fact, that's pretty much all you do. And play some mini games, solve some puzzles, unlock some characters, get new abilities, all in a classic DK vibe and setting. And that's Donkey Kong 64.
It's the first Nintendo 64 game, I believe, to require an expansion pack.
Yeah,
which
is
a big deal.
Expand the memory.
Yeah, in the back of your controller. Isn't that? No, you,
no, you,
no,
put,
no,
it
you put that
console.
One in the console itself. Yeah,
right,
that's right.
Right.
And it was what? It was just so because the game was so large, it required that?
Well, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure, at least this may be, this may just be an anecdote that I heard from no particular source, but I think I remember hearing that it was because there was some issue with the game that Rare was like in the last few weeks of production and they couldn't figure out why the game wasn't running, but for some reason it worked with the expansion pack. Like they had an early version of the expansion pack that Nintendo was working on. So they just decided eventually to just say, we can't figure out what this bug is, so we're just going to release it with the expansion pack.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I'm reading that right now. Yeah,
that's weird. That sounds right. I mean, that sounds like what I feel like a lot of these, this isn't even early video game developers, but I kind of this like in the 90s, at least you've got a lot of these. Maybe you still even have it today. These cutting corners or just like making it work or turning a bug into a feature, you know, like those kinds of things.
Man, that's just programming.
So the story, Kenny, has to do with these. It's a continuation, I believe, from the third and final Super Nintendo Donkey Kong Country.
It's the normal Donkey Kong business. You're on an island. The island gets invaded by a big boss.
A big boss
comes in.
Who?
You know his name. K-Rool.
There you go.
I know.
I don't know if Kenny did know his name, actually.
He might
I just said it. And then you got to save your buddies and collect a bunch of stuff and kick him off your island. It's pretty standard Donkey Kong fare story-wise.
I don't know, because buddies is a big deal. You've got buddies in Donkey Kong Country, but I think you've got them. Like in Donkey Kong 64, your buddies have been captured, and it's some new buddies as well, and you have to go and like save them before you can use them to progress in the game. So you've got Donkey, who is Donkey Kong, who is your main protagonist and who you have access to first, and then he releases Diddy Kong, which is the famous little buddy with the red hat, and then Lanky, you've got Tiny little girl Kong and Chunky Kong, who is able to lift things and get really big. But you utilize those different characters in the game after you release them to progress through from stage to stage.
Yep. Right. Each of them has like a unique move set, and also they have their own individual collectible counts. So you kind of manage your progression through the game is tracked by each character. So you kind of have a banana count and different inventories for each one as well.
Yeah, so we've mentioned it a few times already, but this game is a collect-a-thon at the very core root of it. I mean, like very by definition, you are collecting so many things in this game, which I found interesting this week when we were playing because knowing what little I do about you, it seems as though you are all about collecting. Like just you as a person have all the Nintendo powers and all the Nintendo 64 games and all of the Virtual Boy games. Like you by your very nature are a collector. So I guess my question for you is, what's your history with this game, and is collecting just a part of your nature?
Well, that's kind of a funny story. I don't think that I really had this kind of collecting bug until, I don't know, what was it, 2014, 2015, around then, when Amiibo first came out. After they were first announced, I thought, oh man, those little figures are stupid. That's like, nobody's going to buy those. And then it was, I don't know, a few months later, they hit store shelves and they weren't in very high numbers. So they started to go really quick. And I was like, oh man, I guess if I ever want to get a full set of these, I should start right now. And after I'd collected, 10 or 20 of those, I was like, okay, I'm in it for the long haul. I've got to get the full set of Smash Brothers Amiibos. I mean, I'd always been collecting Nintendo consoles and games, but I didn't really start. I didn't have a game room, and I didn't have I didn't ever consider going for a full library until after that point. So it was very shortly after Amiibo came out that I started looking for every Nintendo 64 game, because that was just kind of my childhood, which I'm sure we'll get into a bit here. But it's funny that you mentioned that Donkey Kong 64 is a collectathon, because I can accept that, and I understand that to be the case. But also, as a kid, at least, it never struck me as that kind of game. It never struck me as a collectathon. I always felt like I was exploring this kind of expansive world, almost like what Super Mario Odyssey achieved most recently.
Interesting.
Yeah. But like, when I think collectathon, my mind goes straight to Banjo-Kazooie. And in a way, I feel like Donkey Kong 64 kind of straddles this line between Banjo-Kazooie and Conker's Bad Fur Day. It came almost equally between the two, I think. And for Rare, this was kind of like almost a halfway point to me, it seems. You are, in the simplest sense, you're going through this game and you're collecting golden bananas and banana medals and every kind of banana you can imagine. But it does feel more to me like this kind of exploration-based platformer.
I love that you brought up Conker's Bad Fur Day, because we played that game recently.
Right, yeah.
And so I had a really hard time this week as we were playing a similar game that came out, you know, similar era, similar style, not comparing the two, just because it was in our sort of recent kind of experience on the podcast. And so I definitely can see some of the places where it feels like there's some overlap or some bridging there.
In a way, this might be blasphemy, but I would say I feel like Rare was better at making games for the 64 than Nintendo was. Like, they knew what they were doing, and they made a good, polished, finished product. I don't know how controversial that is, but
it wouldn't be controversial on our episode. We're
Rare fans for sure. We're also Nintendo fans,
right.
But Rare so many times has done it right. And so, yeah, we just recently played Conker's Bad Fur Day, and all three of us surprisingly liked it, if not loved it.
Yeah.
And then earlier on in the life of our show, I think we did play Banjo-Kazooie. We mm-hmm. ended up giving that our vote for New Game Plus status as well. So, like, we do like Rare, and we do like even the games that you just said kind of sandwiched this game. And I just find it very interesting that we're talking about genre, like where mm-hmm. this actually lies. Because platformer, yes. Action adventure, yeah, maybe. Collectathon, I mean, it's up for debate. You even said something along the lines of open world exploration. Super interesting that as a kid, at least, that's kind of what you experienced with this game.
Right.
And Nolan and Kenny, maybe you can just share even just briefly, what is your history with this game? Because for me, I didn't play it much as a kid. I probably as a teen, I played it maybe a couple of times, and then I just came back to it this week. I've got not much experience with the game. So that's why, from my limited perspective, I'm like, man, it just wants me to collect thousands of different things. And that's kind of one of the differentiations that I see between it and Odyssey. I just got a Switch for my birthday this last week. I've been playing Odyssey for the first time, and I just see, you know, such a difference in what we're doing in DK64 with collecting so many different things with so many different characters, and what we're doing in Mario. So I don't know. Nolan, what's your history with DK64?
I played it quite a bit as a kid. So like you, Drew, the N64 era is my favorite time in gaming. It's a very special place for me. And just, I think the games are quality and amazing. And I played it a lot, but unlike some of the other big N64 games, I've revisited, you know, all of those. Mario 64, Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask, GoldenEye, all the, like, big ones that I loved, I've played since I've played as an adult. But I didn't go back to this one until this week.
Well, whose fault is that?
It's my fault. I don't have an expansion pack. No,
well, that's, I did want to briefly mention that. That's kind of the line I was going down, is that this was sandwiched between Banjo-Kazooie and Conker's Bad Fur Day. And I was talking about that to explain my position on Rare making, I think I said something like better games. And I guess I should clarify that and say, like, if you look back at the 64, like, you're not going to get arguments that Mario 64 and Ocarina of Time are like the best, like the cream of the crop on the platform. I mean, people might argue Majora's Mask or whatever, but you know what I mean? But you cannot look at any one of those three titles from Rare and Super Mario 64 or Ocarina of Time and tell me that the Nintendo titles are more polished than the Rare titles. Like, the Rare titles have these beautiful, like, cinematic cutscenes, and in some cases, voice acting, you know, polished lighting and environments, everything. So it's, they knew how to make the most of the hardware.
Yeah. No, and again, you're not going to find any argument here. Kenny, you're the last one for history with this game. What is your experience with it?
So my most of my experience in the Donkey Kong world is in the Country series. those who've listened to the podcast for a while know that that's my wife's favorite series, and that recently we got to play the Donkey Kong that just dropped for Switch, and that was a lot of fun. And so I had never really played Donkey Kong 64 before this week, so for me it was sort of true retrospective, and that I didn't have any nostalgia ties or anything to it. It was just, hey, we just played Conker's Bad Fur Day, now I'm playing Donkey Kong 64.
Well, I wanted to briefly talk about my experience with it, because it's in a way, I have a lot of experience with Donkey Kong 64, and in a way, I have absolutely zero experience, and I want to explain that.
Yeah, please do.
Because the reason that I chose it today is because in the truest sense, this was kind of my introduction to Nintendo and to gaming as a whole, in a way. Basically, my longtime viewers have probably heard this story in a few different ways, two or three different times throughout the past couple of years. But just to kind of recap, I grew up in a home where video games were pretty much off limits. Like, it was kind of a sheltered home where that was like, it was a no-no, right? So, I mean, yeah. I could have educational PC titles. And I don't know if you guys have heard of like the Humongous Entertainment series of PC games, but that was like my frame of reference for games. And my mom worked this part-time job where one of her coworkers, she would babysit for one of her coworkers every once in a while, like maybe once or twice a month. When she would do that, she would take me along with her. And it was in the evenings that we would go to one of her coworkers' houses, and she would take care of the kid, and I would just kind of be left to do whatever. So the dad of the family had a Nintendo 64 in the living room with Donkey Kong 64. That was the only game that was with it. And that was my only opportunity growing up that I was able to play a game that was like a real video game that wasn't just like one of these educational PC titles. At this point, my guess is this was probably around 2000. So I would have been like seven or so. My experience with it was that I had no experience with video games up to this point. So I was totally lost. I had no idea what I was doing. This is my first real video game, my first 3D game. It was something that was kind of magical to me at that moment, that was like, wow, this is this virtual world that I can go in and experience in these, like, basically it's a living cartoon that I can go experience once a month. And this is like a kind of escape deal, you know? So yeah. It was something where I every time I went there, I would play the game for at least 2 hours. But because I had no clue what I was doing, I never got past like maybe a third of the first area of Jungle Japes, because yeah. I just had no idea what to do. So what I would do is every time I would go there, it had been a few weeks every time. So I wasn't sure what I was supposed to do, what had just happened. So I would just restart a new save file and play through the whole intro sequence, the training area, and then like the first third of Jungle Japes. I think it was up to the point where you unlock Diddy Kong. I never even unlocked Diddy Kong. In a way, it was my introduction and my frame of reference to like the reason that I was introduced to Nintendo games early on, but it was also like I had a very limited view of the game at that time. Sure. Of course, since then I've watched people play the game and I've revisited it. I've realized the full scope of the title, but I think it was funny that I built such a strong memory and nostalgia for a game that I'd only experienced maybe a tenth of. And
yeah, because this is a really big game. There's right, a lot yeah. there.
It is a big game.
Okay, so first of all, that's an amazing story. Thank you for sharing it with us. To know someone's connection, you know, deep connection, in this case, to a video game, obviously creates not only some nostalgia, but like some real feelings there. I mean, some real emotions connected sure. to a video game and to a title. I think we all have not the exact same story, but a similar situation in which there are games. Yeah. Oh yeah. That we're connected to because mm-hmm. of different things in our life. And then secondly, I'm going to now feel really bad when I talk about some of the bad things about this game in this episode. So please, I'm just asking now, forgive me for anything okay. I say blasphemous against your glorious game.
Gameplay.
At the start, please, before we get into actual figuring out how we played the game this week and what we thought about the game, can we just talk about that rap? Do you love or hate it?
Oh my goodness. Can we not really talk about the rap?
It. Oh, come on.
Listen, I know that it's polarizing, but I actually think polarizing? That it's charming. Oh, yeah.
I don't know that I've ever heard of somebody who didn't absolutely love the DK rap.
Really?
Really? Oh, my goodness. It totally, totally put me off to this game.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but I didn't know that it was even a thing. And so, like, I jump in.
Oh, you...
First I wasn't aware, like, of its reputation or that it existed or that people felt strongly about it. And so, like, I load up this game and I just get this rap that feels like it's trying to be funny, but isn't.
That was good.
And the whole thing felt too slow and not self-aware, and it put a really bad taste in my mouth.
I think it's self-aware. I think they knew what they were doing. They were being intentionally ridiculous. I mean, the whole, even Donkey Kong Country, they do ridiculous things in there. I think they know what they're doing, and so they just go all the way. It's cringy for sure, but I think that it's also hilarious.
Yeah, I got the cringe, but without the laughs. But that may have just been where I was, like, going into it, you know?
I was just going to say, I think it's a lot of Rare's tone.
Well, I can tell you, like, I mean, if you've seen, I don't know if you guys followed Yooka-Laylee when it came out, but Grant Kirkhope and that team kind of recreated a version of the DK rap for Yooka-Laylee, and it seems to me that they at least in retrospect they are very self-aware of how ridiculous that whole thing was, but it screams 90s to me, and it's very much like this kind of campy an experience that is tied directly to Donkey Kong 64 for a lot of people.
One of the things that is actually, like, the rap is corny, cheesy, whatever, but it's also a little bit helpful because it introduces the Kongs to you, and then it gives you at least some kind of overview of their unique abilities. So, like, that can actually take us into. We mentioned the different Kongs, Donkey, Diddy, Lanky, Tiny, and Chunky. And we also mentioned that they have a unique set of abilities. And that's central to how this game performs. It's all about you switching out once you've got them, switching in between these different Kongs, and then using their unique abilities to pass certain areas of a stage to be able to collect whatever you're needing to collect at that time. Rather than go through everybody's kind of unique abilities, I guess just, I mean, Drew, we'll even start with you. Is there one ability from one of the characters that you particularly like?
Well, like I mentioned, my experience with the game as a kid, at least, was very limited. I played it pretty much only as Donkey Kong. I mean, there was another save file from, like, you know, the previous players who had gone through and had collected more than I was able to, my little 7-year-old self. But...
So Donkey's jump is your favorite.
It's funny you mentioned that, because when I was playing it this week, I found just by accident that there was like this roll move that you could like roll out into enemies. From my memory, I don't think I ever found that when I was a kid that you could roll.
Which is
to
interesting.
Attack.
So I did a first play this week, which means that like I kind of recorded a video and audio of my experience turning it on for the first time this week. And in there, the whole time I was like, I know that I can get Donkey to roll. I know that I can get him to roll, but I wasn't able to do it in my first play.
I hadn't played through the whole game either, but I got to Lanky and it made me laugh so much. So I think Lanky's my answer. He's got a grape shooter. Instead of I don't know, what does Diddy have? The peanut shooter. So I thought that was funny. And he's an orangutan, so it's just even funnier to me. And I think he's probably my favorite out of the crew.
Yeah, Diddy's my boy.
That's all you got to add there.
That's all I got.
That's all you
got to
say.
Nice, Ken. The flying is fun. His personality's great. He's great.
I don't like him as a person, but Lanky is nice because he's balanced. He's got good speed, good strength, agility, all those things. And then he's got his long arms, so you can reach the switches. You can end up going really fast, I think, even late game, where you're able to run up slopes and use this your orangutan. I don't know, sprint. I don't know what the name of the moves are called, but I don't like, again, I just want to clarify, I don't like him as a person, but I do like his abilities.
Yeah, you get new abilities by drinking the potions, right? So
right. That Cranky gives you.
So Cranky's the like scientist grandpa. And I thought that was a okay way to handle it, but the controls were actually kind of clunky to me. And I was surprised by that because usually it's, you know, I'm fine with N64 controls. But I was like, and I think a lot of it also has to do with the hitbox of enemies and stuff. I was just getting owned when I was trying to like be cool and I couldn't pull it off.
I'll get good.
Indeed.
Let's talk about it, because one of my primary frustrations with this game is that there's not an easy way to switch in between these characters once you get them. And the key mechanic to these levels is switching between them, collecting everything you can with a particular character, or opening up a certain area and then switching back to someone else to be able to go through. Like, you've got to do a lot of switching, and they didn't make it easy. There's no menu, or there's no like just trigger to do that. You have to go and find these tag barrels that you jump into, and they're only at like predefined locations, and then you switch to your characters then, which just caused so much backtracking and redundancy. And I would get to the end of a level, only have to backtrack all the way to the beginning. Like, and they do give you some teleports along the way, but they're never in convenient locations. So that was one of my biggest frustrations playing this game this week, is switching between characters. It's just not easy. And I feel like it just stretches out the gameplay of this game unnecessarily long.
I will take a slight issue with that, because...
All right, let's hear it.
I think I would specifically take issue with where you said that the teleporters are not in convenient locations, because in a way, I feel like this design choice, it kind of encourages players to explore and make a mental map of each area, because especially with Nintendo 64 era graphics, it can be tough to, you know, I mean, if you've got repeated textures and everywhere can start to kind of look the same. So it's important for Donkey Kong 64 for you to kind of get a feel for the area and understand, you know, oh, this tunnel of this cave goes this way and this one goes the other way. In my experience, there will always be a teleporter pad nearby to somewhere where you can go swap characters if you are in a situation where you need to swap characters. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, there are going to be areas where there's like maybe a long stretch that you need to, like, you might get to the end and find out, oh, there's not, you know, I need to have, Donkey Kong needs to be a rhino in this area for me to run through this way, so you got to kind of backtrack and find a barrel. But it shouldn't usually, at least in my experience, it doesn't take any more than 10 or 15 seconds to go back and find a barrel. But.
On an aesthetic note, not a functional note, because teleporters were fine in my mind. It worked well for what they were trying to do, well enough. Not my preference, but I will say, if you're a giant monkey and you're going to teleport from place to place, zipping yourself up into a banana, having that banana reappear and unzipping yourself out of the banana is probably the classiest way you could possibly do it.
Yeah, I absolutely love the kind of character that they were able to inject in this game. Like, they called it banana porting in the game. That was like their whole teleporting system. And they had, I mean, there's parts of the game where I really feel like it straddles this line between Banjo-Kazooie and Conker's Bad Fur Day, because where Conker's Bad Fur Day was very, very polished, they were at the end of the system's life cycle, they knew what they were doing at that point, and they were throwing in all sorts of, you know, inside references and, you know, political jokes and just ridiculous stuff in Conker's Bad Fur Day. This was kind of like the halfway point. Like, there were parts where it would still break the fourth wall and not take itself too seriously. Like, I think you were talking about the power-ups that Cranky gives you through the potions. If you finish, like, if you get the potion for that specific level and you try to come back, Cranky will say, like, I'm not giving you another potion, come see me on the next level. So that's like, there are like little moments like that where it was very kind of aware of itself, I guess.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is representative of the Donkey Kong series, I mean, country even. I just remember that's that kind of character. And honestly, I think they do that a lot with some of the Rare titles. But with the Donkey Kong universe, I always think that's endearing. I think that's fun. I think, again, it's this whole thing of not taking itself too seriously. And it begins with that rap at the beginning.
Yeah.
It's carried on all throughout the game. But I think one of the areas that this game shined in was its boss fights. I thought they were unique. I thought they were different. I thought the bosses were fun. And so that's one of the areas that I just thought they did really well with.
And I don't think there are too many. Like, I felt like the pacing of those boss fights, along with how much exploring you had to do, was pretty well balanced. Sometimes they can overdo it.
I mean, you give me a boss called Armadillo and put two rocket launchers on either side of
rocket
his shell, and I'm gonna be good.
That's all. Yeah, that's all I could ever want.
That's
in
all
a boss
I need.
Fight. I was also taken back by how big the area is you have to explore. So someone mentioned open world earlier, and it feels like it. And I was thinking when I'd go back to this, it would feel way small, because back, you know, when I was a kid, I thought it was huge, and now I have Skyrim. But you have there's so many places to go, and it feels open world at times, but this is a level-based action platformer. So I kind of enjoyed that. But I will agree with Dustin. when they lock areas behind a character or something like that, where you you feel like you have to change your character when you don't really want to. I don't like that. It feels almost like a microtransaction without being one. It's kind of weird.
It's the early days of microtransactions, and you had to pay like 50 cents to change between your characters.
Well, I was just going to say that you mentioned that your kind of your perception of this as a kid, that you thought that you were going to come back to it and think that it was much smaller. Mm-hmm. It's kind of along those lines. I just wanted to mention that I remember thinking when I saw this as a kid that this game looked absolutely beautiful, that graphics would never need to get better than this. And remember thinking that this was my introduction to 3D games, like as a whole. I could see that there were polygons in the game, and I could see that, you know, there were places where it didn't look perfect, like a living cartoon. But in a way, your imagination kind of fills in the gaps. When I see Donkey Kong on the screen and he's made of, you know, 100 polygons or something like that, I'm not thinking about that. I'm thinking this is this ape who's running through this world, and I'm kind of like, I remember them as entities, I guess, rather than as models in a game. And maybe part of that is like a difference in cynicism. Now that I'm an adult, I can go back and look at things like that.
Which is a perfect transition into our next section, because I love that you even said that, because as a kid, it was the cream of the crop. It was the best thing that you could get, and it was never going to get any better. As an adult, you know, we always, at least to some degree as a kid, have these rose-colored glasses on. And still, in today's framework, I think in our age section, we should talk about those kinds of things and see if those qualities that we loved as a kid are still good for today.
Aged. So I'll start this one off because it was the most noticeable thing for me this week. Donkey Kong Country, right? That series, very successful at the time, very iconic now. They had to transition a genre that they made, Rare made, the country games, into the 3D world. That's a hurdle because you will lose a lot of the aspects that people loved about the 2D platformer, and you'll introduce some new things. So one thing that was lost, the music is so different, and it music for me is very important. So it set the tone for this game. So this game feels like Banjo-Kazooie. The composer is not David Wise on this one, and it's a more happy, upbeat jungle and still on theme music. And I think it fit. Don't get me wrong, but I really miss the like serious and just like deep music of the country games. And for me, it actually changes my view on each series in each game.
I have to say, I absolutely love the soundtrack of Donkey Kong 64. And I wanted to briefly mention that I feel like a product of at least its era, if not its specific studio, just coming from Rare, is that one of my favorite things coming from the position of someone who has worked on games as a programmer, I really respect when they're able to work in dynamic systems like this, where the soundtrack for the game, if you're running through like Jungle Japes as an example, you're going to have this basic theme that you hear from the beginning of the game. If you drop into water, you're going to hear a restricted, limited version that sounds like the song is being played from a stereo underwater. If you walk through a cave and now it's a little bit creepier, you're going to have a few instruments leave and a few more eerie instruments come in to pick it up. But it's all kind of consistent, and it's on the fly. That they're not fading out a song and leading into something else. It's all this kind of this consistent world, I guess, for lack of a better phrase, where they're adding and removing instruments. I think one of the first games to do that was Super Mario World, where when you pop on Yoshi, you would get that dynamic bongo track. And so that was something that I wanted to bring up before you'd mention it, is that the whole sound system is pretty impressive to me, that they were able to keep these same motifs throughout different tracks and then take and add instruments. And it really feels like rather than a soundtrack that was slapped onto a game, or, you know, a listing of tracks that was meant to go along with certain experiences, it feels like there is a Nintendo 64 orchestra that's narrating what you're doing in the game, for lack of a better phrase.
And I think it's hard to compare. The Donkey Kong Country series has some of the best video game music of all time, in my opinion. And so it's hard to compare other games. I know this is Donkey Kong, so I think it's fair. But Because like you said, Nolan, and you started to say at least, or you maybe even hinted at, I don't think the music in this game is bad by any means. I think it fits. I think it's thematic. I think it's good. Drew, the qualities that you just mentioned of like when you go into a cave or go underwater, I did notice those, and I think that's outstanding. It's just, I think when you try to compare it to, you know, one or two or three titles that did it, some of the best, I do think that this kind of falls behind those. But when it comes to graphics, I mean, Drew, you were just talking about this as we were leading into this section. I still think that they do well. Polygons and Nintendo 64 always has an aging issue, but I think, I would imagine, is this, well, I don't know if this is later in the Nintendo 64's life cycle or maybe smack dab in the middle or whatever. But
it's getting a little later.
It's getting a little later. I just think they did it well. I think the character models are great. I think the stage designs, you only have like, what, 6, 7, maybe 8, depending how you count it, different levels there. And I think for the most part, they all have their own character and flair. I think there's a variety of enemies. So I think musically and graphically it holds up today. I just think that graphically they probably do it a little bit better than even music here.
I'd agree, and I think part of that, not all of it, some of it's just design, and there's certainly 64 titles that I roll my eyes and go, ugh, polygons a lot more than this one, though it's not my favorite look as a console. But this one did a great job. Part of it is because they did have that expansion pack. They're able to show distance a little bit better and do a few other visual things that really just give them a little bit of an edge, even if they kind of bit off more than they could chew in getting stuck using that expansion pack. And, you know, hey, everyone have some extra hardware. I think that was good. The thing for me that was the best choice they made, though, in most cases, is how willing they were to keep stylistic things from earlier in the series. Again, being a big Donkey Kong Country fan, I actually really liked that they made sure you could still change to the rhino or the swordfish, that you could have elements where you were on the cart and that the feel and tone kind of emulated that. That your switching did work by finding those barrels. And I know to some degree, you know, there's gameplay decisions. Would it have been better to be able to switch more freely? Possibly, but it at least felt really on theme and on tone to do the things the way they did. And I like when developers respect the history of a game. And yeah, you got to update it for 3D, but they did it without trying to change what they had done before. And at least as a philosophy, I really respect that choice.
Final thoughts. At the end of each and every one of our episodes, we determine whether or not this game receives our vote for New Game Plus status, which, Drew, this is just our general thumbs up or thumbs down. Do we encourage our viewers to find a copy of it today, play it, or to reserve their retro game time for a different retro video game? As always, we'll allow our guests to go first. So do you give it your vote for New Game Plus status or not? And then maybe just a brief summary of your thoughts.
Sure. I think you know I will say yes.
Whoa, really?
Yes, no, absolutely. And my reasoning behind this is I'm going to go back to the discussion about Rare's other titles for just a moment to kind of to draw a comparison here, to make my argument. If you take a look at Banjo-Kazooie and Conker's Bad Fur Day, I think you guys did give Conker's Bad Fur Day the thumbs up. Is that right?
Yeah, we did.
We did, yeah.
And have you covered Banjo-Kazooie?
Yes.
But a long time ago.
Did you also give that a thumbs up?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we did.
So my argument is, at least from my perspective, if you take a look at Rare's portfolio, they started off with Banjo-Kazooie, Banjo-Tooie, and they kind of got the feel for the 3D platformer. And they hit it out of the park with those games, I feel. And then Conker's Bad Fur Day was toward the end of the library. They had a lot more experience and they were able to kind of do whatever they wanted with that title. And it benefited from that process. I think Donkey Kong 64 is almost in this perfect sweet spot for me between the two, in that I went back to Banjo-Kazooie. I never played Banjo-Kazooie as a kid. I went back and played it as an adult. And as I explained, I didn't really have that much experience with Donkey Kong 64 either. So most of my impressions have been made as an adult. Although I do have a lot of nostalgia for it, it's still, I feel like my impressions are more objective than you might expect. Whereas Banjo-Kazooie really struck me as a collectathon and really felt like kind of overwhelming to me that I had all these different things to find. I feel like Donkey Kong 64 was more of this Goldilocks zone between the two, in that Conker's Bad Fur Day was an excellent title, but it was also really ambitious. So if you play that game today, you're going to run into a bunch of slowdowns. It looks great, but it doesn't perform as well as Banjo-Kazooie. Like, if you look at Banjo-Kazooie, it's going to hit this consistent frame rate, and it looks great, plays great. And Donkey Kong 64, I feel like, was right there in the middle, where they had these advanced techniques, and they made this kind of, yeah, like you mentioned, the world feels like this kind of interconnected open world, but at the same time, it has this consistent performance, and it doesn't have a whole lot of slowdowns if you play through it today. Finally, I'd like to give one defense as to why I don't consider Donkey Kong 64 as much of a collectathon as some of those other titles.
Let's hear it.
And that is that if you take a look at what you can collect in Donkey Kong 64, you're going to see you have bananas, you have banana medals, golden bananas, and then you have different ammo for weapons. So you have like oranges that you can throw and Donkey Kong's coconuts and Diddy Kong's peanuts, whatever. I would make the argument that that is not more collectibles from the standpoint or it's not more collectibles than a game like Super Mario Odyssey from a certain perspective. And that is that so the normal bananas to me function similar to like coins in a Mario game. So you get these bananas, you can spend them, but if you get 75, you end up getting a banana medal. And so in my mind, it's kind of like a parallel between coins and one-ups in Mario games. If you take a look at bananas and medals that in that way, the golden bananas to me are pretty obviously like the stars in Super Mario 64, right? Like you get them, they are the only thing that matters when you're trying to unlock a new level. And then I think the thing that sets Donkey Kong 64 apart from like Mario 64 or Odyssey is that you have these ammo counts. And ammo, like the oranges and the coconuts and peanuts, they are not a limited resource in the sense that you would consider a collectible from a collectathon. You can find them in crates, they respawn, and it's a kind of reusable resource. And then the golden bananas are what you're really concerned about trying to solve puzzles to unlock new areas with what are essentially Donkey Kong 64's version of stars. So that's my perspective of how it doesn't give me the same feel of like all the different things that you had to collect, like the jiggies and everything, the feathers from Banjo-Kazooie. And just as in a general sense, I personally would say that Donkey Kong 64 compared to Banjo-Kazooie feels like it has a little bit more soul to me as a result. It feels like a more crafted experience. And it, in a way, I mean, they had more experience at that point when they were building Donkey Kong 64. So that makes a lot of sense. But
So just to be clear, you do not give it your vote. No, I'm just kidding.
I guess I would say in conclusion, Donkey Kong 64, Conker's Bad Fur Day, and Banjo-Kazooie are all some of my absolute favorite Nintendo 64 titles. In my personal opinion, I would rank DK64 above the other two, with Conker coming in second because of the reasons that I just explained. But regardless, if you're going to go back and play a 64 game today, it's got to be in the top five titles. It's a cheap game. I think you can get it for $20 or less today. And it's it is really representative of the era and the attitudes and practices of the Nintendo 64 world of games, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, fair enough. That is one vote affirmative. Kenny, take it.
Yeah, I think holding it up as a representation of kind of 64 at the time is probably fair generally, but in my mind, that's not always a good thing. I do like, Drew, you talking about comparing these two, because in my those three games, because in my mind, there is sort of a life cycle there.
Sure.
But if you're saying the middle game of 64 was kind of that cycle hitting its stride, I think it was that cycle trying to grow up. And in a life cycle, you get this awkward in-between stage that, you know, for people is puberty. And in for me, Donkey Kong 64 was kind of that for this series. It doesn't feel as mature, and clearly isn't in terms of design and audience, but and as thoughtful as Conker's Bad Fur Day in terms of humor. Even though they tried to kind of go there, they didn't fully commit. Obviously, some of that's design and intentional. Again, I like that it tried to stay on theme with some of the earlier games in the series, but a number of things they did just didn't quite jive for me. I mean, you look at even the fact that they had to scramble to change some hardware kinds of things at the last minute, and it's not a problem. It's fine that that happened. But it just feels like that to me is how this game sits, is sort of this awkward in-between. It's certainly not a bad game in my mind, And my issue is not collecting things, but I think for me, the repetitiousness of it is something that was kind of a buzzkill. You kind of clear out one area with one character. Okay, now go back and clear out that entire area with another character. Oh, just kidding. Now do it two more times. Mm-hmm. And it's that piece that just rubbed me a little bit wrong. Good game, but relative to other games of the same era, I don't like it as much. So for me, this one's not a New Game Plus status, personally.
And you just lost us a friend in Drew.
I know, and your childhood is now offended.
That's one yes, that's one no, and we'll just go to Nolan. Remember, yeah. We've got to have at least three of us say yes for it to be New Game Plus certified.
Okay, well, I'll step in and bring it back a little bit. I do give this game my vote for New Game Plus.
Hey.
Yes, that has collect-a-thon moments, but it wasn't distracting enough for me to be like, it's not worth playing. It's definitely worth playing. The worst part, honestly, back in the day, and I guess today if you're going to play physical, is not having an expansion pack. Like, that's an annoying thing. I remember it being a hassle for me back in the day for Majora's Mask as well. Outside of that, I think this game is a great continuation of a series. The Country series is better, but this game's worth playing. New Game Plus.
All right, so that is two affirmatives and one no, and so I guess it's just on me then.
I'm worried.
I'll say this. I'll argue day and night that it is a collect-a-thon. Like, I'll go to my grave believing that.
Well, I'm curious to hear about what your rebuttal is to my perspective.
Yeah, I mean, no, I definitely think that your perspective is valid. You named a few of the things, but I think there's even more, like the blueprints and the...
Oh, that's true, that's true.
There's even musical,
for your power-ups.
Like, they all play instruments. And just the frustrating thing for me is that only certain Kongs can collect only certain color things, and mm-hmm. so it's just, you have to keep going back, and you have to... It's just stretching out the game, in my opinion... And for me, that in and of itself, that part of it is not fun. But here's the thing. This is what I'm going to say here, is that although I don't like collect-a-thons, I don't think necessarily in and of itself the collect-a-thons are bad or evil or a wrong thing to do in gaming. There are plenty of people that enjoy collect-a-thons and games where you have to collect a lot of these different things. I do think that there is far too much backtracking here, but with the character and the charm and the look and even the feel and the different character abilities and the scope of the world, I think there are a lot of things that this game does right. And although I don't like the collect-a-thon type game, I think that there are many, if not the majority, that would benefit from playing this game today. So I actually do give it my vote for New Game Plus status.
You fooled us all. You fooled us all.
It comes through, and Donkey Kong 64 is New Game Plus certified.
It would have been weird if it wasn't, honestly, because it's a pretty big title.
Yeah, so thank you for suggesting this game and for allowing us to revisit a classic this week, Drew, and for sharing all of your experiences and history with it. That's always so telling that's a huge part of nostalgia, a huge part of retro gaming is our initial
experience. Yeah, that's why so many of us play video games, is for the experience of it and what it mm-hmm. does for us and how it's fit into our life. And so getting those stories is just a blast.
We are at the time in our episode where we put aside Donkey Kong 64 for now, and we randomly select a new game to play. And so out of our Retro Master list, we're just going to completely randomize and find out what game we're going to be playing for the next 7 days. Sorry, Drew, but we're leaving Nintendo for now, and we're going to the Sega Genesis. It is a 1994 real-time tactic strategy game.
Whoa. I got excited at Genesis, but then for that being the genre, I got a little turned off.
But it's published by Electronic Arts, EA.
No.
We're supposed to hate them right now, aren't we? Loot boxes and such.
I don't know. I feel like they go back and forth. It is single player or multiplayer. The game that we're going to be playing for the next 7 days is called General Chaos.
Okay, never heard of it. It's probably going to be bad.
I know nothing about this game. Drew, have you ever heard of it before?
Nope.
All right.
Wow. Neither have I. What's a Genesis?
Yeah, right?
The true Nintendo fanboy comes out.
So find a copy of General Chaos and play with us this week. It will be new for all of us.
Join us in Discord this week. We're going to be chatting about that game along with a bunch of Nintendo stuff and a lot of Nintendo stuff, I'm sure. So go to our Twitter and look at our bio. Click on the Discord link to get the invite.
Well, we also want to say a big thank you, not only to Nintendo for joining us this week, but to all of our patrons who support us on an ongoing basis. You guys help us to make a continually improving podcast about something that we love and we know you do too. So thanks so much for your support, especially to our producer level supporters, Zion, Gimbarino, and Phil. You guys are super awesome.
Drew, before we leave, could you just tell everybody how they can find you online and what all you're doing right now?
Yeah, absolutely. I have my YouTube channel is just youtube.com/Nintendrew. All is one word. I cover kind of obscure corners of Nintendo's history, as well as how-to DIY projects and product reviews. And that's my main outlet, I guess. But you can also follow me over on Twitter. It's my username is Nintendrew with an underscore afterwards. Somebody took my username.
No.
And Instagram, I'm fairly active over on Instagram as well. That's NintendrewYT. And that's about it.
You can find us on our social media. That's Facebook, Twitter, or Twitch at NGP Podcast. You can see us on our YouTube channel at New Game Plus Podcast. Listen to us directly on any podcast provider of your choice, and then subscribe so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes. And while you're at it, leave a kind rating and review. This episode, as always, was edited and produced by our good friend Tom Tate. Join us next week as we play General Chaos. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
I'm Kenny.
I'm Nolan.
And that is Nintendrew, and this has been New Game Plus.